Support for Quality of Life comes from the James Irvine Foundation and Kaiser Permanente.
This is Quality of Life, Valley Public Radio's look at the people and the issues affecting the way we live in the San Joaquin Valley. Here is your host, Joe Moore.
Well, hello and welcome to our program. The Kern River has long been known as one of the wildest rivers in the West. But far below Lake Isabella, as the channel makes its way through the city of Bakersfield, the days of a wild river, or for much of the year, a river at all, are long gone. But a new plan from the city of Bakersfield aims to do what many thought would never happen, return year-round water to the river through the city, creating a new community amenity. Some think the idea is overdue. Others say it's a foolish waste of water in an arid region in need of more agricultural jobs. Of course, we'd like to know what you think. How would a flowing river contribute to your quality of life? How does the Valley's ag economy contribute to our quality of life? You can call us at 559-275-8989 or toll free 800-224-8989 and tell us what you think about the Kern River and this latest plan from the city. Here to tell us more is Lois Henry from the Bakersfield Californian. She has covered issues of California water and the Kern River in particular for some time now. Lois, welcome to our program.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine. This is, I understand, one of your favorite issues, and water in the West, in California in particular, is always one of the perennial topics of discussion, debate, and controversy, and the Kern River is no exception to that. This latest plan is something unique, though. It's rather rare that we hear of a river that's dry most of the year with a plan from a municipality to return water to the river. Exactly how did this current proposal come about?
Well, hopefully you'll be having Sworn Core on
yes.
as well, and he can give you a lot more of the details. He was the water resources manager for the city when they when this all kind of came about. And there's a long, you know, as everything with water in California, there's a very long and twisted history to this. But basically the city saw an opportunity to try and get more water. The city owns a substantial amount of water rights to the Kern River, and it also owns the channel and the land around the river through the town. And that's our main recharge for our groundwater, which the city relies on for drinking water for the city of Bakersfield. And so they saw an opportunity through this very long, twisted lawsuit where they could apply for some water from the state that had been deemed forfeited. And their plan was to run it down the river and you know, just let it recharge and, you know, sort of let the chips fall where they may. You know, it wasn't going to run it down the river and then, you know, siphon it off or only run it down the river for a certain amount of time until growth caught up with it or anything like that. The idea was, oh, maybe we can get this 50,000 acre feet were being forfeited. Maybe we can get this 50,000 acre feet and we can run it down the river. And that way we can have a river, you know, for the enjoyment of the public, for the betterment of the environment, and to recharge the aquifer so that we can use it for drinking water. Because that's, like I said, our best, most natural way of recharge. That's why we have such a really flush aquifer here in Kern County is because of that river. And it, you know, it's pristine water. It's extremely clean. It doesn't take as much to treat it. It increases the water quality, betters the water quality for all the various different wells. And so that was their plan. And like I said, Florin can give you all the details. If you want all the details on the very long and twisted lawsuit between two water agencies and how that all culminated and went to the state, he can, he's far more versed on that. But that's the basics of the plan.
And we'll get to that in just a second. In terms of the response in the community, what have you seen so far from the public in this process moving forward? People see the river as it is now, dry most of the year. Is there a great interest among the citizenry to see water restored from your perspective?
I've been pretty shocked at how much people want that river back. I kind of thought, you know, it's Bakersfield, it's Kern County, we're very pro-ag, we're very pro-oil, but very pro-ag, you know, almost everybody's got a connection to the agriculture industry here, and, you know, it's our main, one of our main economic drivers. And so I kind of figured that people would, you know, say, oh, no, 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 you know, and there's some people that say, no, 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 we need to use that water for ag, but the fact is it can be used for multiple uses, and I've tried to explain that in the columns, and people have responded like you can't believe. People have tolerated that dry river thinking there's no other options, and when this other option popped up, people have supported it in droves. When the first issue came up to the state board of the Water Resources Control Board at the state, and there was an opportunity for people to comment. You know, I kept sort of beating the drum and saying, okay, here's how you comment, here's how you do it, here's your deadline. And then we put a little petition, you know, in the paper that hit all the high points, and then, you know, people could sign it and send it in. And first of all, people sent in on their own 200 or 300, you know, individual emails and letters. And then also there was about 4,000 of those petitions that were signed and sent in by people. They, you know, they had little drives at their work, you know, to get people to get on board with this. They, you know, had people signing this stuff, you know, out by the river, you know, walking, people who were walking by the river. I mean, it was just amazing. And we did a little show at the Californian on the radio where we said, oh, you know, this is our last day to, we'll, you know, if you want to drive them down here and dump them off with us, we'll send them up, you know, so you don't have to do the postage. And people were coming by in carloads, which is boxes of these things. So it was, and not only that, people have gone to meetings. I mean, people don't go to meetings, you know, as well as I do. People, you know, unless there's something that's really going to threaten their neighborhood or their way of life, they're not going to get up and go downtown and sit through, you know, a boring meeting to have their say on a topic. It's just really hard to get people to do that. And they've shown up, like, by the hundreds for that when they can. I think it's pretty clear that the public really wants their river back.
And this is certainly a controversial issue. We'll get into some of the other arguments in just a little bit. Richard Diamond had a very interesting op-ed in the Bakersfield, Californian, I believe yesterday, talking about some of the other views, in today's Californian, talking about some of the other views on this particular issue. But I want to bring Florin Kaur into the conversation now, a former water resource manager for the city of Bakersfield. Florin, welcome to Quality of Life.
Good morning. Thank you.
Tell us a little more about why we're talking about restoring the river. Why is the river dry right now in layman's terms? Water is one of the most complex issues in the West, but just briefly, why is the river dry to begin with?
Well, the major part of the channel that runs through the center of Bakersfield is dry because most of the water has been diverted off upstream, mostly for irrigation use. There was a relatively stable river prior to about 1960, 1961. There was a huge upspurt in the amount of acreage, irrigated acreage in the county, and the water was simply siphoned off and went to ranches, went to farms. And just to touch on what Lois talked about earlier was the lawsuit. That lawsuit went on for 12 years. Filed somewhere around 1995 and culminated with a decision by the California Supreme Court to end the case. But really, it was farmers fighting farmers on that whole issue. And one district was complaining that the other district was using more water than they had historically, while both were still farming with it. And the decision that came out of the lawsuit was that one district hadn't used their water up to the historic entitlements, and the other district didn't have the rights to use it. So nobody won, except the water was laid out by the courts for the State Water Resources Control Board to make a decision on. So the city of Bakersfield jumped in there and said, well, we'll take that water since it's unappropriated and we have a good use for it. And as was explained earlier, the reviving the river and a water supply and a big issue coming down the road is water quality. And it was mentioned the Kern River is a very high-quality water. It is, and it will greatly benefit the citizens of the city of Bakersfield for their groundwater supplies and their water, other water supplies, because it is high-quality water. So that's the kind of the basis for why the city of Bakersfield jumped in this thing is to capture that water that was declared unused, unappropriated.
We're talking about the future of the Kern River. If you just joined us on Quality of Life today, the city of Bakersfield has a proposal to restore year-round water flows throughout the river as it flows through the city. As I understand it, Florin, this particular proposal the city is talking about right now isn't a sure thing. There's other districts, other users that are also talking about using this water. Is that correct?
That's correct. And there's two parts to this river restoration or Kern River flow restoration program. One is some water that the city of Bakersfield had allowed some agricultural districts to use over the past 35 years, and that's going to be brought back. In other words, the contracts are up, the deliveries have been made, and this is a portion, a good-sized portion of what we're trying to do to get water going back down the river. And the second part is this unappropriated water that I talked about. So there's two pieces to this big puzzle trying to restore the river and try to get something going year-round. And the quantities we're talking about is in the neighborhood of 70,000 acre feet of the what we call contract water that's being pulled back. And the other water is could be up to 90,000 acre feet.
Now, how does...
So it's a good segment of water. And the other entities, the city of Bakersfield is not the only one that has filed for this unappropriated water, the 90,000 or so acre feet. Five other entities have filed for a piece of that action, and each and every one of them have asked not only for irrigation water, but water for urban and municipal use, the same as the city of Bakersfield. So it's kind of interesting that we're hearing how we're going to be drying up the farm or making it more difficult to farm when they're saying in their applications, which are available to the public, you can go onto the State Water Resources Control Board website and dig up those applications and take a quick look at them, and you'll see that they're asking for municipal industrial water also. So it's interesting that the districts are claiming that you're going to dry up the farms and these small cities are going to go away because of we're taking the water away.
Again, we're talking with Florin Kaur, a former water resources manager for the city of Bakersfield and one of the individuals that helped kick off this current campaign to restore water to the river throughout the city of Bakersfield. Also on the phone, Lois Henry from the Bakersfield Californian. We'd like to know what you think. Tell us what water in the Kern River throughout the city of Bakersfield means to you and your quality of life. The phone number is 559-275-8989 or toll-free 800-224-8989. You can also email us talk@kvpr.org and let us know your comments. In fact, we just received one comment on Twitter from a user, Gabrielle, in the South Valley. She says, in response to our question, should water be put back in the river? She says, no, it stinks, and the bacteria will give you a rash. The council will turn tail and drain it as soon as there is a death. What about the safety aspect? Is this a concern, Lois? Have you heard that kind of concern before?
I've heard a couple of people have concerns about, you know, West Nile virus, which, you know, standing water could potentially, you know, attract mosquitoes and grow larvae and stuff. But if you have a running river, I don't think that that's necessarily as much of a problem. And as Florin said, this is water that comes straight out of, you know, the watershed, and there has not been a problem with it. Maybe she's reacting to, I think Lake Buena Vista had some problems a couple of years ago, right, Florin? That's run by the county, by the way, where they had some E. coli or something in there. I'm not sure. Do you remember?
Yes, it was the, I guess the layman's term is swimmer's itch. It's a parasite that's in the water, and it'll grow more in standing still water than it does in moving water.
Now, aside from the agricultural concerns, we'll get to those in a moment. One of the concerns I've heard raised is the river itself, as it's been developed to the surrounding areas, the oil fields, the industrial areas around the river, it's not really designed for this natural riparian flow that it once had. It's not necessarily, in all cases, with all respect to the great efforts of the Parkway over the past years, it, in some ways, it's not this pristine environment that it once was. How do you respond to that? I'll let Florin respond.
Okay. I'll take a shot at it. You mentioned the Parkway. The Parkway has been a great project to restore the banks of the river, trying to get it back to a somewhat natural state. I think you'll notice if you cross over 99 looking upstream and downstream, a lot of work has been done over the last 30 years along the Parkway. The city has had City of Bakersfield has had a big role in doing that, but a group of people called the Kern River Parkway Committee, and there's two individuals, I'll go ahead and mention their name, Rich O'Neill and Bill Cooper, have been out there elbows in dirt, planting trees, putting in irrigation systems, trying to get things started, and trying to restore the river channel through town back to a relatively natural state. And for the most part, it has been well achieved. If you go from, say, Manor Street west past Stockdale Highway along the river channel, you'll see a great amount of work has been done planting trees, creating some great environments, huge recreational facilities for the runners, for the bike path, among others. You add water, and you almost have a complete system then. So I think if there's a criticism that the river cannot be restored or isn't being restored, I think if somebody goes out and takes a look at it right now, I think they'd be pleasantly surprised at the work that's been done. And the addition of a steady stream of water in the channel would be a great enhancement for that project.
Again, we're talking about the Kern River on Quality of Life today, and you immediately talk about restoring water to the river, and it sounds like an idea that, you know, everyone would be behind, but it's complicated. There are pros and cons to every side of the water issue in California, and in this particular aspect, agriculture is one of those groups that has some concerns, including this op-ed in the Bakersfield, Californian by Richard Diamond from North Kern Water District. Richard joins us on the phone now. Richard, welcome to Quality of Life.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Tell us a little more about your concerns. Your op-ed lays out a number of them in the California Today, specifically in regards to what this would mean to communities north of Bakersfield and farmers north of Bakersfield in terms of their extra reliance on groundwater.
Yeah, the city's proposal that they're forwarding in their forthcoming environmental impact report basically is a reallocation of Kern River water that has been used for many decades north of the river, some of it in my district, actually probably more than half of it in North Kern Water Storage District and other portions in neighboring districts up in the north part of this county. And obviously we all rely on the same groundwater basin. And there's been other impacts to ground or to surface water supplies in this region. There's other districts in these areas that have state water project supplies and federal supplies off the Fryant system. And both of those supplies have been reduced, some temporarily, some permanently, as a result of environmental issues up in the Delta, as well as the settlement on the San Joaquin River. So when we look at those losses, plus potential losses of historical supplies resulting from the city's proposal, there are very large blocks of water here. We're looking at reductions of on the order of a third of historical surface supplies. And what would happen is, if that's all comes to fruition, there'd be a much more groundwater pumping and reduced groundwater levels to both the ag users and the small municipality water systems up in this area, and they would be the benefits that would accrue in Bakersfield would be offset by negative impacts up here in the northern part of the county.
That's a concern you raised in your column today. I know you took issue with what Lois said in the Californian a few weeks ago in terms of the concerns about the river being able to raise the water table in the city of Bakersfield. That may be the case. I understand you don't feel that's the case for residents and water users in your area.
Well, particularly as you go to the – I mean, the river channel runs in a kind of a southwest, west-southwesterly direction, the current river channel. And the groundwater will move – eventually head up north. It ends, you know, Tulare Lake Basin is kind of the sump for the Kern River. But that water moves very slowly, and particularly for the municipalities on the east side of the valley, that would be Shafter, Wasco, McFarland, and probably even up in Delano, the benefits they would derive from water in the channel versus the benefits from those surface supplies being available directly in the north part of the county. I think when we get into the technical part of that, there will be a significant difference in those benefits and a reduction in water quality as well as water levels in those northern counties related to the city's proposal.
We're going to continue to talk about this issue in just a moment. We're going to take a break right now. Richard, if you can stay with us, as well as Florin and Lois Henry. We're talking about the Kern River in Bakersfield and a plan to restore water flows throughout the year through the river channel. It's creating a lot of discussion, some controversy. We want to know what you think. We'll take some of your calls in just a moment here on Valley Public Radio. You're listening to a rebroadcast of today's edition of Quality of Life. When you hear the phone numbers, please don't call.
There's the South San Joaquin, where the seeds of the Dust Bowl are found. And there's a place called Mount Whitney, from where the mighty Kern River comes down. Well, it's not deep nor wide, but it's a mean piece of water, my friend. I may cross on the highway, but I'll never swim Kern River again. Oh, I'll never swim Kern River again. It was there I first met her, and it was there that I lost my best friend. Now I live in the mountains. I drifted up here with the wind. I may drown in still water, but I'll never swim Kern River again.
Those words of Merle Haggard may prove to be not true. Maybe people will be swimming in the Kern River again if the city of Bakersfield has its way. We're talking about the Kern River on Quality of Life today, and our guests are Lois Henry from the Bakersfield Californian, Florin Kaur, former water resource manager for the city of Bakersfield. We also have Richard Diamond on the line from the North Kern Water District. We want to go to the phones now, though, and talk to Janet in Bakersfield. Janet, welcome to Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio.
Hi, good morning.
Yes, tell us your comment.
Well, I've been an avid exercise enthusiast since 1991 when I moved here to Bakersfield. So the majority of my exercise time has been spent on the Kern River Trail, either cycling, rollerblading, or running. And I've noticed that when it's dry, it's a very sad situation. The river is dead, basically. And when the water is allowed to run through the Kern River, it's actually beautiful. It breathes life into the city. It draws more people out to the river to enjoy. And I think if you go west out towards Enos Lane, you'll find that there's a transformation in our ecosystem. There's birds, there's animals, there's just beautification, and the life that it brings to Bakersfield is just something that you can't even imagine when you see it dry up and shrivel up periodically.
Well, Janet, I really appreciate your comments. I take you're in favor of returning the water through the city then.
Oh, absolutely. And kudos to Lois and everybody else who's been bringing this issue to light. It's needed to happen for a long time, and I'm just so thrilled and excited that we have a chance to have water in our river.
All right. Thank you very much, Janet, for that comment on Quality of Life today on Valley Public Radio. Let's go now, and I want to direct this next question to Lois. We heard from Edward in Bakersfield, who sent us a note, and he said, how much is it going to cost to run water in the river? Has the city looked at this particular issue? Has there been any discussion on the financial aspect and the cost to citizens?
That question's come up before a couple of times, and as Florin can explain to you, the city owns...
Hello, Lois? I think we lost Lois, but we'll get back to her in just a moment and get those comments. Florin, are you there by any chance?
Yes, I am.
Can you answer that?
I didn't hear the question.
I'm sorry. The question is, what's the cost to the city financially for this plan if it goes to fruition?
Well, there's some.
Have they looked at that yet?
Well, it is being looked at, and one of the issues may be that since the water will simply be run down the river, will be a revenue because the water had been sold in the past. A portion of the water had been sold in the past. I'm talking about the basic, what's called the basic contract water that the three agricultural districts enjoyed over the last 30 years at a relatively cheap cost. And there will be an ongoing cost if there is the unappropriated water that will be picked up from the State Water Resources Control Board. There's fees and annual fees involved with that, and also the ongoing cost now to pursue that water, the legal and engineering fees that are being generated, and or the costs that are being generated right now in order to pursue that water. And then again, there will be an annual a cost from the State Water Resources Control Board.
Okay. Thank you for that. Let's go to the phones now and talk to Rich in Bakersfield on Line 5. Rich, you're on Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio.
Good morning.
Yes. Tell us your thoughts about the Kern River.
Well, I'd like to see the water run back into the Kern River. I was born here in 1946. I'm a native and growing up enjoying the river here, and it really started to dry up in the 60s. And in 1976, the city of Bakersfield, the citizens of Bakersfield, purchased almost 150,000 acre feet of water, and it had to be sold to the farming agencies to pay for the bond that we all voted on in 1976. So those contracts are up, and I think it's time now for the city of Bakersfield to control the water. We could still sell it back to the farmers, but I think that should change the point of delivery of the water. Instead of delivering it to the farming groups upstream, let it run through Bakersfield, recharge in the Kern River panel, and then sell it to the farming agencies west of town.
Well, thank you for that comment again, Rich. Appreciate your calling in today and your work on the river over the past with the Parkway. I want to turn now to our guest, Richard Diamond, who's on the phone. One of the issues that you brought up in your op-ed in the Californian today is the issue of growth of the city of Bakersfield. How do you feel that that fits into this overall equation of water and conservation and now putting water down the river? Hello.
Well, we're talking about a large block of water that the city. Well, and as Florin mentioned, there's several blocks of water, but the forfeited water that's up at the state board is new to the city if they acquire that.
More water to grow, essentially.
The aquifer and improving water quality, and those are both real things as it relates to putting water in the Kern River channel. But there's an ultimate use of that additional water that at least in most parts of California, you have more water, it generates more growth in the cities. And as a resident of Bakersfield, I think I'd be concerned about making sure the city lays out a plan that that addresses growth. I mean, if you look at state mandates for urban water conservation and the quantities of water we're talking about, Bakersfield could approach 1 million people. And, I think we need to really consider the quality of life aspects of that as the city's process for this moves forward.
Lois, what's your response to that? You cover politics as well as things like water. Is there some concern or is there some thought, rather, that with all of this additional water the city now has, that maybe that's going to be an engine for even more growth down the road, and maybe that down the road, years from now, we'll talk about taking water out of the river for more development, that this is just a temporary move?
This is one of those kind of chicken and egg arguments, and it's also one of those arguments that, it can taint pretty much everybody involved. Yes, more water means that we could grow more, but it hasn't stopped us
so far. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We never
have water before.
We were going great guns, yeah. And I completely, you know, have my other issues with growth, but we were going great guns, and we had, you know, a large water supply and, you know, mapped it out. And then, you know, what stopped us, what brought us to a screeching halt, of course, was the recession. So, you know, that huge growth push wasn't really fueled by, oh, look, Bakersfield has water, let's go grow there. You know, the growth push was because it was cheaper here and, you know, people were getting, you know, ridiculously low interest rate loans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All the stuff that we know that, you know, has burst the bubble. The fact that some water, ag water agencies actually sell water to foment growth in Southern California, I think, needs to be addressed, because I'm not saying that, you know, Richard Diamond's district does. I don't think that they actually do, but I've backtracked a lot of the ways that Kern River water is used to back sales. They call it exchanges, but, you know, it's pretty much sales outside the county. So, you know, water will go where money is basically the answer to that question, and I don't think that it's necessarily, if the city gets the water and runs it down the river, is it going to foment growth? Potentially, yes, it will support some growth, but that's always also been the plan. That water that Florence's been talking about, that contract water that's been sold to the ag districts, and they're now talking about taking it back. The plan was always taking it back after 35 years, because the idea was we would need it to sustain Bakersfield. That's the whole reason that the city in 1976 bought that water. The fact that our growth doesn't really, you know, our population doesn't need it right now means we can run it down the river and they can use it, has a multiple use, and they're learning more about how to be able to use water. So we can have it in the river and then also have it for drinking water. I think this whole, you know, if Bakersfield gets the water, you know, it's going to mean runaway growth. I think that's just kind of a misleading argument, frankly.
I'd like to pass along another email comment from a listener in Bakersfield. This is from Tracy. She says, I'm a regular bike path user, and it fills my heart with joy walking along the river when it runs. Previously, I had to drive up the canyon to enjoy walking along a river. There is already a resurgence of wildlife on my walks. It improves my quality of life in Bakersfield immeasurably. Let's go now to the phones and talk to Gordon, a longtime Kern County resident. Gordon, you're on Quality of Life.
Hi.
Yes.
I was telling the young lady who took my call, I'm 80 years old, and during the 40s, I worked on a hog and cattle operation right down in the Kern River bottom. We had large numbers of hogs and purebred Hereford cattle, and we sustained this operation with absolutely no water. Actually, the Kern Rock Company, who had their gravel pit in that area at the time, allowed us to draw water from their well to sustain the operation. And having had a firsthand experience on the total lack of water and being able to keep a business in operation, I think was a very good experience. And I think what we're talking here about down the road is the survival of the species. Are we going to allocate water to the beautification of a very small geographical area, or are we going to allocate the water to, as I say, sustain the survival of the species and use this water for the production of food?
We're talking about the Kern River today on Valley Public Radio, and I want to pass along another email from Bill in Bakersfield. And this goes more to the heart of water rights in California. How does a person or group of people claim ownership of a resource as basic as water? Shouldn't water, surface as well as groundwater, be a public resource? Florin, not to get into the basics of water law, but there's a lot of different water interests and water owners and water rights holders in this area. How would you respond to a question such as the one raised by Bill?
Yeah, you're correct. California water law is very complex, but in another sense, it's very simple. You know, California water law follows the old English law of riparian rights, and whoever diverted first water from a creek or a stream or a river retained ownership and were allowed to use it and move it to the location they needed to use it. Maybe in a broader sense, what the city of Bakersfield is attempting to do is maybe not call it ownership by the city of Bakersfield, but in a sense asking for at least a portion of this water we're talking about, the State Water Resources Control Board, to direct the flows down the river so everybody would own it. The state of California saying that water needs to go down the river, not necessarily going in the hands of the city of Bakersfield, although the city would be operating the river channel and making sure the water was there. So I think to answer the question straight up would be, yeah, it's going to belong to the people, the citizens of the city of Bakersfield, or the people of the area, not necessarily a certain entity. But the other portion of the question that was asked about ownership of water, yeah, you can ask the State Water Resources Control Board who owns water anywhere in the state, and they'll say they do. The state of California owns. You ask the same question of a federal agency, and the federal agency will say, oh, we own the water. So it's kind of a broad question, broad issue, although over the last 130 years on the Kern River, water has been moved around. It's been sold. When I say sold, I mean sold to for use in farming operations. It's been sold for use in drinking water operations, and money has changed hands, so that assumes some sort of an ownership issue there.
Let's go ahead and turn now back to Richard Diamond before we close our program today. And Richard, again, is from the North Kern Water District. He has an op-ed in the Bakersfield Californian taking issue with some of these plans from the city of Bakersfield to return water to the river. Richard, it seems like in reading your column today, it seems like one of your concerns is process and the way the city is going about this. How do you see this moving forward, and do you think that there is some solution that can be reached where all parties can walk away with a satisfactory result?
Well, I'm hopeful that that's the case. I think I kind of closed my column with that more of a pessimistic view. You know, there's, and it might have been mentioned before I got on the call, but there are existing facilities in place. I think one of your callers talked about changing the point of diversion for ag districts to use some of the Kern River water. In other words, let it run down further in the river channel and then divert it at that point and repump it. And those proposals have been out for a number of years. And if Florin was still at the city, I think we'd maybe have him done, and we'll get him done without him, and I'm hopeful that we will. Because the ag districts have supported those type of programs or those concepts for a number of years, and I think there's opportunities to do that.
This is Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio. You can continue the discussion online. You can email us at talk@kvpr.org and let us know your thoughts. Stay tuned. In just a minute, we'll be back and we will talk about another issue. The Valley has been an epicenter of the housing bust for some time. We'll talk about what foreclosures mean to you, Valley residents. We'll get your thoughts and more in just a moment here on Quality of Life. You're listening to a rebroadcast of today's edition of Quality of Life. When you hear the phone numbers, please don't call.
Support for Quality of Life comes from Chevron and Avicennia Wellness Center, online at avecinia.com.
You're listening to Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio. The economy's been in sad shape for some time in the Valley. A big part of that is the housing bust. Earlier in the 2000s, the Valley experienced dramatic growth in the housing market, and then the housing bust hit. The Valley is still struggling with the issue of foreclosures. In fact, many of you out there may have a story which you would like to share. How have you dealt with the issues surrounding the housing bust, whether you've been in foreclosure, behind on your payments, or something else? We'd like to hear your story. You can call us at 559-275-8989 or toll free 800-224-8989. You can also email us at talk@kvpr.org. We now have two guests in our studio with us today to talk about this particular issue. Joining us is Cindy Rojas, a foreclosure prevention counselor with the Community Housing Council. Welcome to our program today.
Hi, thank you.
And we're also joined by Dan Hawkins, who specializes in short sales. He's a realtor with Realty Concepts. Dan, welcome to our program today.
Thank you.
Cindy, let's turn to you and talk about some of these issues right now. What are we seeing in terms of the market in the Valley here in 2011? I've seen reports from a variety of sources that foreclosure filings are up, foreclosure sales are way up. What are your clients and the people that you work with experiencing at this point?
All right. Well, a lot of the people right now, they're having a difficult time with their payments, especially because of the economy. They're not able to afford it, or a lot of them have lost their jobs. So what we do is we go ahead and help them through the process. So if they're having a difficult time giving their payment, or if they've already missed one, two, or even more payments, we can go ahead and see what are the possible solutions that are available to them and then assist them throughout the process.
How have you seen it change in the recent years?
Well, it's actually increased lately a lot more than it was at first. There's it just seems like there's kind of waves, you know, like sometimes there are more people coming in and then it kind of slows down for a little bit. Right now it's starting to pick up a lot more. Most of the people that are coming in is usually because of unemployment.
And let's turn now to our other guest today. Dan, tell us about what you're seeing in the market right now here in the Valley in Central California, Fresno, and beyond.
Well, foreclosures in the Valley here are up quite a bit. There's two types. There's both the REO property, which is a bank-owned property, and then, of course, there's the short sale. And it's really encompassing about 66% of our sales right now between REO and short sales. When we talk to people, when they're in trouble, they've generally been tried to get a loan modification. Maybe they've been turned down. Maybe they haven't. And they really have five options besides a loan modification, and that's a short sale, a deed in lieu, a foreclosure, let the house go, or file bankruptcy. So we try to give them all their options and make sure they have all their ways to go, and then decide which way they want to go. And if they want a loan modification, send them to somewhere like the Community Housing Council to see if they can get that if they haven't already done it.
We hear this term short sale a lot. I know a lot of our listeners may be familiar with it, but some may not. Explain for our listeners in layperson's terms what that means, short sale.
A short sale is when you sell a property for less than what the loan balance is. An example would be you owe $200,000 on your house. You sell it for $150,000, you're $50,000 short, and that amount the bank may relieve depending on the offer that's made on the property.
And we're seeing an increase there as well?
Yes, yes. It's about a quarter of our market. It's about 26% of the sales now are short sales.
Another issue that came up a few years ago, President Obama in March 2009 introduced the Making Home Affordable program. It at the time was projected to serve some 3 to 4 million people who were underwater, behind in their mortgages. And it has, in at least most media accounts, have indicated that it has not come close to those numbers, around 600,000 individuals it's helped so far. What are you seeing in terms of users' access to that program?
Well, the access is there. You know, anybody can apply. The only thing is that if you don't meet particular guidelines, they won't be able to assist you. The guidelines, you can read some of the guidelines at makinghomeaffordable.gov and go over them. You know, if you're already paying less than 31% of your gross income, which is what they calculate your payment to be, then you wouldn't qualify. You know, just to give an example. So one of the main restrictions that I see is that they base it off of the gross income instead of a net. So that becomes an issue, and that's what disqualifies a lot of the people sometimes to be reviewed for that.
Oh, again, we'd like to get your comments. You can email us at talk@kvpr.org, and you can also call at 559-275-8989 or toll-free 800-224-8989. One thing that I've heard from some people is that they know that they're in a challenging situation, and they go to their lender, they go to the bank and ask, you know, what can you do to help? And the bank says, we can't do anything to help until you're officially behind, you're officially missing payments. Is that correct?
It's pretty much based off of the investor. I mean, if the investor has a certain guidelines that you're not meeting, then they're going to let you know. Unless you hear it from them, then you know what your options are. But there's a lot of people that are being scammed that are, you know, they're being told, oh, we can help you, just, you know, stop giving payments, and you know, just so that they can go ahead and review you. That's not true. There's a lot of lenders that do go ahead and review you and have given modifications even while the mortgagor is, you know, current with their payment.
A few months ago, we saw a halt in foreclosures. There was a big issue and concern among the banks in terms of paperwork. Did they have all their paperwork right? Was there a process that they were following in terms of signing off on these documents? There was a halt in foreclosures. Are we seeing this spike now simply because of that halt and the backlog that came about at that time? Dan, what are you seeing in that regard?
I'm seeing more trustee sales coming through now. There's approximately 5 million homes held right now by the banks across the United States. There's another 4 million in foreclosure coming through the process of 4 months. So I think they seem to be increasing and letting the banks – or letting them go to sale now. I don't know if that's because of the lift in the halt or what it is, but it seems to be an increase in proceeding with the foreclosure process.
And what are you seeing?
Well, I've seen a lot, like he says, you know, a lot of more sell dates coming up. There's, it just seems like lately, if you just don't qualify, that's it. You know, they'll tell you, you know what, you don't qualify because of this, because of that. And also, like you were saying, because of the documents, it's become more and more difficult for the servicer themselves to go ahead and look and review everybody because there's so many people applying. And it is a long process, and it is frustrating, but you have to be patient.
Mm-hmm. That process is very challenging for people. I know that the lenders and the banks are deluged by so many of these applications. They're having a hard time even mm-hmm. getting through the paperwork, and they're not necessarily even up to date. They're asking people to fax in information and things. What do you say to someone whose entire life is tied up in their home and their dreams, and they're not getting a response back? They've done what they were told to do, and in this process and trying to get some sort of help, are you seeing that a lot, or is that backlog easing at all?
It's not easing as much as we would like to. And I think that the best thing that we can do as counselors is just go ahead and empower our clients, just to let them know, educate them about the process, because the reason that a lot of people get frustrated is because they don't know what's going on. You know, they're pretty much there just at the mercy of the servicer, and they don't know what's going on. But if you educate them, explain to them why they're asking for the documents, when to expect the documents to be, you know, requested, then you feel a little bit more empowered and you know what's going on. And like I said, it could be a very long process.
Since we're having some problems with our phones today, I think we'll just take some calls through the email and also over text here. We just heard from Rebecca, and she says that her husband and herself bought their first home in their early 20s, had $50,000 saved in addition to a down payment, and did a 5% down. The household income of about $150,000 a year. When her husband lost his job in 2008, they went through their entire savings trying to hold on to the house, finally did short sale. Her husband has been unemployed since 2008 and is educated with a master's degree. Are you seeing individuals like that in addition to the quote-unquote subprime individuals?
Yes.
Is it more widespread?
Yes.
It's not, just targeting a certain, people. No, it's just everybody is having a hard time in general.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. It's kind of across the board on all types of borrowers.
I know both of you are based here in Fresno. Do you see are there differences in the market outside of Fresno in particular, in the Valley overall? Or are you aware of any variations? Is Fresno somehow different in some other way than other Valley communities?
I don't think so. I think, Stockton is like the number one foreclosure capital in the United States, in California. But Fresno is kind of right up there too. We have a pretty low median income in compared to our population, so the affordability of the house is really second in California next to high desert. So as the prices went up and then they came down, you know, the affordability level was pretty low. So I think that's why there's more foreclosures here.
Another concern that I've heard raised by some is this issue of strategic default. People who can pay but choose not to, knowing that they're underwater, the house is worth so much less than what the loan is. Is that an issue that you're seeing in the market right now? Is that what's making lenders cautious in trying to work to some resolution with people who may, you know, legitimately have an issue?
Well, I do see that it is being done by a lot of people. The problem with that I see, it's like I mentioned before, you know, unless you hear it from your lender that they can't help you because you have not defaulted on a payment, then you can make a conscious decision of, you know, what you can do. But people that are just doing it because they want to, you know, play the game pretty much, it can come back, you know, can backfire on them because a lot of them, they'll stop giving the payment that they can afford. But then they go out and spend the money. And what happens, being in default does not guarantee a modification either. So what happens if they're not saving their money and they're not giving their payment? You know, if in the end, 4, 5, 6, even a year after being under review, if they don't get the modification, then what are they left with?
We're talking about the real estate market and foreclosures in the Valley, specifically on our program today on Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio. Cindy Rojas, a foreclosure prevention counselor from the Community Housing Council, joins us, as well as Dan Hawkins, who's a realtor specializing in short sales here in the Valley. We'd like to know what you think. You can email us at talk@kvpr.org with your story. I know many of our listeners have been impacted by the housing market, and it's been such a wide spread issue with the real estate bubble and then the subsequent bust. We'd love to hear what you think. You can call us with your comments at 559-275-8989 and toll-free 800-224-8989, and we will relay your comments in here. We're having some telephone technical issues this morning, but that is certainly a hot topic right now. On the flip side of this issue, let's go back. Back in 2005, 2004, the market was so hot. Home prices were so high. There were a lot of people that were priced out of the market. Mm-hmm. Is this in some ways one of those issues that has two sides, in that we have a lot of people now where affordability is so much more accessible in the market? What are you seeing, Dan, in that area?
Yeah, I think that was a problem back then. What they had, what they call a stated income loan, and basically, if you had good credit, a credit score over 720, it really didn't have to produce any documentation as to being able to afford the house. So you could be able not to afford the house, get a stated income loan, have good credit, and buy the house with really no documentation at all. So I think that was one of the problems. The other problem is a lot of people got into adjustable loans where their loan moved up. And some of them quite drastically. There was one that had a 2% jump where the payment jumped to 2%. In some cases, could be $300 to $500 in a couple of years. And nobody makes that, or at least most people don't make that kind of income to justify the higher payment. So they just got you in lower at the affordable and then raised the payment to where you couldn't afford it. And those are all pretty much defaults.
Are you seeing that as well?
Yeah. What happened that I've noticed from a lot of the clients is that they were sold on the mortgage payment at the time rather than the loan itself. So they weren't explained the terms. They weren't explained, you know, any of the adjustments that were going to be made to it. So a lot of people don't even know what kind of loan they have. So what I see is that they got sold on the mortgage payment more than anything else when they couldn't afford the full loan.
Are you seeing now that new home buyers or folks who have been in this situation in the housing market are more educated about the process than they were before? And is there a need for more education?
Definitely. I think that they are becoming more, especially because of everything that's been going on. They're going out there and, you know, a lot of them do online research or whatever means that they have available. They go ahead and do as much research as possible.
We just have another call that came in here and a question from a listener. Is it a good idea to hold on to a home that is overpriced? And number two, is this an investor's market? I'll turn to Dan on that. It's a very generic. I mean, it's such a broad question. It's hard to
give particular
advice.
I think it's an investor's market on the buying end. I'm not sure it's on the selling end. But, you know, one thing we have to remember is home ownership is your home. If it's an investment, that's great. But I think a lot of the problem came in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years when people were buying their home as an investment instead of buying it for your home and worried about how much this is going to go up and that type of thing. You're buying your home. You're staying there. If you're not going to sell it, it really doesn't make any difference what the value is until you're ready to sell it. So I think it's a great time to buy. It's not so great a time to sell.
Another issue that's come up, and we only have a few minutes left here, is refinancing. Those individuals who may want to refinance this time, what are you seeing in terms of people having success with that at this point? They have equity, and they want to take advantage of the rates that are out there right now. Is that a popular solution for a lot of folks?
I think it is. One thing I did want to mention, too, in going into these default situations, you really have to be careful because there's a recourse and a non-recourse loan. And basically the difference is when you purchase a home and you have the purchase money in California, the bank can only take that house back. But if you've refied the house, they can come after the borrower for deficiency. So there are some pitfalls you have to be really careful of. And in the short sale, especially, there is debt relief on the amount that the lender is short. So you really need to seek tax and legal advice through all these transactions. When you're making any of your five options, I think it's really important to be able to do that.
Cindy, before we go, if individuals who are listening right now or want more information on your services with the Community Housing Council as a foreclosure prevention counselor, what can they do?
They can go ahead and reach us at, we have a 1-800 number. It's 1-855-852-4663. We have a local number, 551-221-6919, or also online on chcfresno.org.
And Dan, if folks want to get in touch with you?
Yeah, they can call me on my direct line at 559-490-1542. And I'll be glad to answer any other questions or go over the five options that they have.
Great. Well, again, we thank both of you for joining us today and talking about foreclosures here in the Valley. And we thank all of you out there listening to us for your comments today. Our guests again, Dan Hawkins, a realtor, a short sale specialist, and Cindy Rojas from the Community Housing Council, a foreclosure prevention counselor. That's all for this edition of Quality of Life. For our audio engineer, Marv Allen, producer Tracy Sharman, production and operations manager Don Weaver, I'm Joe Moore. You can continue the conversation on our website at kvpr.org and email us at talk@kvpr.org. And we're already getting a lot more emails on the Kern River segment. So keep them coming, and we'll pass those along on a future program as we revisit that issue. Quality of Life is a production of Valley Public Radio. Stay tuned. More great programming on the way. This is KVPR Fresno, KPRX Bakersfield.
Support for Quality of Life comes from the James Irvine Foundation and Kaiser Permanente.